Welcome to Positively Autistic, Autism, God's Bright Kids. Here on this radio show, you will find encouragement in the midst of the challenge of autism. We will share stories of how God works in the midst of those affected by autism, as well as how He uses ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Because there is hope, there is life, there is love, even and especially in the midst of autism. And here is your host, Dana Susan Beasley.
I am your host, Dana Susan Beasley, and welcome to Autism God's Bright Kids. It's Monday, January 23rd, and I recorded this show in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and this week is going to be a big week because my son Sam is turning 16 on Wednesday. Unbelievable. I am in shock. So we're going to have a really fun time. My nephew, Nathan, who is here, he's actually here with me now, but he's going to show our homeschool club how to make medieval swords and do skirmishes. So we're going to have a great time and a lot to do in preparation for that and everything else, all the quote normal things that go on around here. Can't speak. Okay, so, and before I want to go on with today's show, I just want to share some exciting news. I got a message from a gentleman who has Asperger's. I assume that he's a young man. And he's from Canada. But we are in the process of arranging an interview. And this is going to be really, really special. And I feel very honored that he reached out to me and said that he really liked my podcast. So that's wonderful and great. And I'm glad that I can be inspiration to people out there. So you'll hear more about that from me in the next few weeks. Going to try to get that arranged soon. And the other thing that we've been doing, as we've been sitting here tonight in my office, my nephew and I, we listened to the first few podcasts by Danny Rady with AspergerExperts.com. I bought the Deep Into Defense Mode course. That's what we're listening to. I'm really thinking about that for Sam. And I know that that's where he's at, is in this defense mode. He's admitted it to me. And so that's the next thing that we're going to work on. And my nephew and I were talking about it and how to show unconditional love and what to do. And So why don't you, Nathan, first introduce yourself again. Say hi.
Hey.
So this is Nathan. He's from Albuquerque. He was on the show last week, and he's been visiting with us for the last few weeks.
Wonderful time up here.
Yes.
Even though it was a little cold.
Right. And he'll be here for one more week, and then going back home, and he's going to be really thinking about coming back and living here. So, with that said, we've been talking about defense mode, and reiterate briefly, after we come back from a break, about how to show unconditional love, some of your ideas.
Autism. We hear about it more and more. To families and individuals, it can be devastatingly hard. What can we do to help? And if you are affected by autism, how can you find hope? Hi, I'm Dana Susan Beasley, and I am the publisher of an upcoming book, Angels in the Midst, Rising Above Autism and Asperger's. I understand about autism as my son and husband have Asperger's. It is challenging. But I also know that God can work in the midst of these challenges. God can use ordinary people to bring hope to those facing this challenge. But I need your help. I need your stories, your artwork, poetry, and videos, especially from autistic children. I need sponsors, and I am looking for worthy organizations to donate a portion of the proceeds to. Come along with me on this journey. Join me and get involved at riseaboveautistic.com. Again, riseaboveautistic.com. There is hope, there is life, and there is love, even and especially in the midst of autism.
Talking about unconditional love and some practical ideas for Sam, even for my husband Travis, who also has Asperger's. So just kind of give some ideas of what you were talking about.
Well, you know, one of the first things that I think we talked about is the unconditional love part. And the thing that really stood out to me about that whole topic was that you know, I'm married. I got married on October 8th of 2016. My wife, she is not autistic or anything, but at the same time, being with her for the last few years and everything, and just working on our individual relationship, really taught me what unconditional love truly meant, at least on my part. And one of the main amazing things that one can show to their spouse or even their children as far as unconditional love goes is overuse the words "I love you." You know, when you say it in a very direct way. Look at them directly in the eye and actually even lean in a little bit to the point where you can see your reflection in their iris of their eye and just look directly at them and say, "I love you." You know, and it's that direct, very clear intent of getting that message across that really sticks in their mind. And words have amazing, tremendous power. Throughout history, throughout the whole history of the world, words have amazing power. I mean, it really does. And saying the words, "I love you," is incredible what it can do to really help heal a lot of things that are going on in every individual's life that they may be going through. And so definitely if you're a parent of an autistic child, and if your child is in what we call defense mode.
What Danny Rady calls defense mode.
Exactly. Then, you know, that unconditional love is definitely one of the main keys. And part of that is also learning to listen. And mm-hmm. and not jump, you know, to tell them what you think is going on or tell them what you want to happen. Make it more about the understanding them. Understand where they're coming from. Get them to feel comfortable. It's that safety, that comfortable feeling of not being threatened that is one of the main healing processes for any individual who struggles with being closed off or anything like that emotionally. And it's that listening will get you so far in life. I know, again, with a lot of my relationships in my life, whether it was with my wife or friends or whatever, when you develop the skill to just hold your tongue for even just 10 minutes while the other person is talking and telling you what they feel and think, even if there's something you don't agree with or if there's something you want to comment on, whether it's good or bad, just being silent for 10 minutes or until they're finished talking and then you open up with what you want to say. That period of not interrupting them and looking at them directly as they talk and absorbing what they're saying and truly listening, not just hearing the words, but trying to have empathy and understanding about what they are going through and what they are saying is one of the number one key things you can ever do for any individual, whether they're autistic, whether they're schizophrenic, or very healthy, whatever kind of person you are dealing with, if they're going through something, being a true listener is a priceless skill when it comes to learning how to connect and communicate with anyone, especially with people with autism or schizophrenia. You know, these people, me myself, I am schizophrenic, and I know by personal experience that one of the main ways I was able to cope growing up was that my family, my parents, they never really interrupted me. They always came up to me, even in my darkest, fearful, angry moments. You know, my mother especially, she would come up and hug me, whether I wanted it to happen or not. She would wrap her arms around me and just say, "Nathan, I love you. It's not your fault." Those words were amazingly huge. It is not your fault. Hearing that is so healing for anyone with autism or schizophrenia, because it's true. It's not their fault. They don't know what's going on. They don't know what they're feeling. They don't know why these things are happening, and it makes them mad. It makes them so frustrated and fearful and sorrowful and just grief and despair and all kinds of things that are happening at once that they can't comprehend themselves. Even though they're the ones having these emotions, they can't, there's no way to know what they all are, because they're all happening at the same time. But having someone come to them, no matter how dark, no matter how angry, no matter how sad they are, they will hear those words, "I love you, it's not your fault." Those words are so incredible. And that's one of the main things that shows your unconditional love to someone with autism or schizophrenia, is that effort to come up and not blow up and to not tell them what to do, not tell them how to live or how to feel or anything. It's that simple, gentle, unconditional, loving action of just coming up and either touching their arm or embracing them in a hug, or even just sitting right in front of them and looking at them directly in the eye and just saying, "I love you. It's not your fault." Those words are so incredible to someone with autism or schizophrenia, because we feel, especially me, you know, in many ways in my past as a schizophrenic, we feel rejected already by a lot of the world. We already expect negative income as far as emotional talk and as far as, you know, society itself.
Well, same with autism. Yeah. It's just,
yeah.
Oh, you have autism, it's immediately negative.
Exactly. Immediately. Exactly. And just for a moment, all of you who are listening to this, I want you to close your eyes for a moment, okay? And I want you to think back to maybe when you were bullied in school, or maybe when you were ridiculed for something, or some kind of dramatic thing when you were a child. Close your eyes and just replay that through your mind. And then just think that people with autism and schizophrenia have that kind of uncomfortable, angry, resentment kind of feeling, sad, whatever you're experiencing, while you picture the most embarrassing, most ridiculing thing that you've ever gone through as a child growing up. Think of that on repeat, 10 times worse. That is what we feel. We always feel that all the time. And it gets to the point where, yes, we close off. We build walls. We make barriers because we're afraid. We are truly afraid, and we don't even understand fully what we're afraid of, which makes us even more afraid, because it makes us think that there is something wrong with us when really there's not.
You know, looking back, I just had a flash of memory. I was bullied in school, and I can remember I closed myself in my room. And I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote. Mm-hmm. And my mother would get upset because I was closing myself in my room. And I guess, in a way, not that I had Asperger's, that was a defense mode.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a very shy person
mm-hmm.
and had low self-esteem and all this, but that was me being in defense mode. A lot of that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting. But it's also interesting that, you know, thinking back, I just had this revelation that God allowed that to happen, to have all that bullying so that I could have a heart of compassion for Sam.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's another major part of being a parent with someone with either autism or schizophrenia, is realizing that spirit of empathy, that spirit of understanding and not, you know, getting angry because they're in the room all the time. It's more of a, why are they doing that? They're not being, you know, disobedient. They're not being antisocial. They're literally trying to survive. It's
There's
how they cope.
There's something behind the behavior.
Exactly. There's something behind the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, it's kind of funny when I think about it, because, you know, for so many people, they think it's very complex and about rebellion and things like that, and that, you know, either autism or schizophrenia is a rebellious kind of thing that they have or whatever, and it's causing them to rebel. But no, they're not rebelling. The fact is, they are freaking out on the inside, and they don't know how to cope with it. When I was younger, up till even, like, you know, about 3-4 years ago, I would go everywhere, and sometimes I still do, in a black hoodie. And I would always I would always have my hood up.
You were wearing it the other day.
Exactly.
While you were playing video games.
Yeah, I would always have my hood up. And the reason why, it wasn't because I was trying to look scary. It wasn't because I was trying to be rebellious. The main reason why I had my hood up all the time in a black hoodie, no matter where I went, was because my peripheral vision and all the vision of what my eyes could see was too much for my brain to comprehend at once without making me feel paranoid and making me freak out. And so I learned by putting up my hood, it narrowed my sense of vision. It made it very, very straight, very single-minded, so to speak, of a vision. Kind of like a tunnel vision where I didn't have to worry what was to my right or to my left or above me or anything. It was literally everything within my hood that I could see was all I had to worry about. And I came to realize that. I didn't even know I was doing that for that reason at the time. But there was a time where I talked with my mother. We were actually sitting in a Cracker Barrel. And she just, out of nowhere, just looked up and she asked me, "Nathan, are you wearing that hood because you can't stand looking around and you feel overwhelmed?" And I thought about it for just a few seconds. And it just occurred to me. It clicked. I'm like, yes. I don't know how to explain it in my own words, but you just did. Yes, I cannot stand all of the noise and motion and everything. And from what I understand, autism is a lot like that itself.
Well, and you also have sensory integration issues, and a lot of kids with autism deal with that.
Exactly.
So that's something very similar.
Exactly. And many times, especially even now, I still wear sunglasses a lot of the time.
Yeah, you wore those in church this morning.
Exactly. And it's not because I'm trying to be antisocial or rude or whatever. It's because, for me, having some kind of thing hiding me in some way makes me feel safe from something I don't even understand as far as what I feel is threatening. If that makes sense. Think about that for a minute, and for all of you who are listening, is that people with autism and schizophrenia, for so long, they're going to go through a period where they are dreading and they are fearful of something they don't understand, something they know is just something is terrifying them, but they don't know what it is.
They can't express it either.
Exactly. They can't express it, because how do you express something you don't even know what it is? That's like asking a blind man to paint the Mona Lisa. Without even telling them what the Mona Lisa is. You know, it's impossible. It doesn't happen. But it's the fact that when we're in that constant state of fear, having a form of shield, having a form of kind of like a shroud around us or on our eyes or like my hoodie and stuff like that, it literally makes a lot of that chaos and a lot of that fear go away, because it feels safe when you put like a black hoodie over you and put the hood up and put on sunglasses. It makes you feel safe from the world because no one can see directly who you are. And so it is literally a very common defense mechanism that, you know, people with autism or schizophrenia have.
Well, there's another one. Weighted blankets.
Oh, yeah.
Blankets. And then you haven't seen this. Oh, boy. That would be really neat if we could see this. Temple Grandin. A movie about Temple Grandin. I think it's called Temple Grandin. And when she was young, she realized that if she got in a cattle chute and felt that press around her, she felt safe.
Yeah.
I'm sure that those of listening to this have probably seen the movie or know about Temple Grandin, because she's one of the biggest autistic advocates there is. But it's very interesting how it feels safe when they're all compressed.
No, definitely. There were times where my dad would help me with my sensitive integration disorder, because I would ask him, because at that time, you know, I was a small kid, and I would be like, Dad, you know, come behind me and squeeze me as hard as you can with your arms around my chest. I need that pressure. Because that pressure, it feels controlled. It feels stationary. It feels solid and firm. Something you can actually feel. It's something real. Like, you know, like feeling a hard table. It's there. It's solid. You can rely on it. That kind of feeling is the same kind of thing with feeling extreme pressure on your body or weighted blankets. It's about constricting is literally a very comfortable feeling for a lot of, maybe not constricting is the right word, maybe like, what would you say that word would be?
Well, when you said that, I thought, well, is that why there's such a heavy draw toward video games? Because he's sitting in the chair, like you brought your Xbox and he's playing Skyrim.
Yeah.
So he's sitting in his chair and he's got his attention focused to the screen and that's it.
No, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. That's definitely
that's
the thing.
Safe.
It's the safe, narrow vision where all he has to worry about is what's on the TV screen.
Right.
He doesn't have to worry about what's in the room or what's going on around him.
Mm-hmm.
He only has to worry about what's right in front of him and what he's working on, which is the game. And for me, after long years and lots of heartache and lots of drama, I finally got to the point where I figured out that for me personally, once I got to the point where through lots of therapy and lots of life changes and growth, I got to the point where I didn't have to wear a hood hardly ever. I still wear sunglasses, yes, but at the same time I learned, and especially while I've been up here, Dana, helping you with all the chores and helping you vacuum the floors and starting this passion for carpentry, I've definitely learned that I feel so much better being able to obsess about a trade that will benefit my life, something that I can build with my hands physically. You know, like I made that wooden sword for Sam. Working on that for about 2 hours straight, no breaks, you know, that doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, when you're carving with a little whittling knife for 2 hours to get the right shape and you're sanding it down and everything, that actually takes a lot of strength. That takes a lot of physical commitment. And doing that, being productive with something I could build with my hands that wasn't complicated but was very straightforward and but still took a long time to do but also took a lot of physical commitment was amazing for me, and I feel so much better when I'm building things with my hands, when I'm doing something that's, as people would say, there's software and hardware, right? You know, software is the things you can't really touch physically, and then the hardware is like a, you know, wooden table. I like the hardware kind of, you know, work, because it's literally something I can feel with my hands. Feeling a hammer in my hands or a whittling knife or whatever it is that I'm working with, it's that reliance, knowing that it's real, knowing that it's right there in my hand and it's not going anywhere unless I will it to do so. It's that control over what I'm doing and knowing that I'm the one who's guiding what's going on. It's very, very helpful for my schizophrenia and my overall health and mindset. Because
so channeling channeling that fear into something else.
Exactly.
Might help. Like, I'm thinking, for Sam, a pottery class or something like that. He loves pottery. He loves sculpting.
Yeah, there's pottery, blacksmithing, carpentry. There's just normal arts and crafts.
I have to think what he is obsessed by and what he is talented with. He's very talented.
Exactly.
He's talked about pottery. Of course, he also talked about being on a shooting range. But we'll see. But, and then the other thing I was thinking while he said that is contrast where you are today with wanting to be productive to where you were almost 2 years ago, where you were in an assisted living place and
very dark place.
And even before that, you were living in my house and
all
you did was play video games.
Yeah.
And, yeah, in a very dark place. But contrast that. What's the difference between back then and now? What would be the difference?
That actually leads to one of the other points of what we wanted to talk about today is one simple word, even though it's very hard to actually do or obtain, is drive. The drive to do great things. The will and the desire to get up and do something productive is one of the fundamental things about anyone succeeding in life. If someone does not want to succeed or go through the work to succeed, they will not succeed. Guaranteed. Fun little run of words right there. But you get my point.
Well, it's like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. You can show them the door, but they have to be the ones to go through. You
know,
the Matrix. You know.
Oh, but, okay, I saw that movie, but...
But also, to quote another thing from the Matrix that is very useful in this conversation, is there's a scene where Neo, the main character, goes to see someone called the Oracle. Now, she's like this old black lady, and she's baking cookies or whatever. Above her door, in Latin, is a phrase, which is a phrase that really helped my life. And it's just, you know, one or two words, however you want to spell it, very simple. Know thyself.
Oh, yeah.
Know thyself is such a simple phrase, but it means endless amounts of different philosophy things and deep things that you really can grasp. And knowing who you are as an individual, whether you're autistic or schizophrenic, is a major...
Or neurologically typical.
Yeah, exactly. It is literally a major weapon for your benefit to succeed in life. Because what I found for myself, being schizophrenic and with all the issues I have, I had to know a good deal about myself before I could even get the drive to do great things. And the reason why is because for so long I didn't know if I was worth anything. I didn't know if I was worthy of greatness. I didn't know if I was capable, and I was afraid of what people would think and all these different things because I didn't know who I was myself. And I found out that was a major part of the underlying bottom reason and fear. But we're going to a commercial here soon, so I'll pick up after the commercial ends. And,
Autism. We hear about it more and more. To families and individuals, it can be devastatingly hard. What can we do to help? And if you are affected by autism, how can you find hope? Hi, I'm Dana Susan Beasley, and I am the publisher of an upcoming book, Angels in the Midst, Rising Above Autism and Asperger's. I understand about autism as my son and husband have Asperger's. It is challenging, but I also know that God can work in the midst of these challenges. God can use ordinary people to bring hope to those facing this challenge. But I need your help. I need your stories, your artwork, poetry, and videos, especially from autistic children. I need sponsors, and I am looking for worthy organizations to donate a portion of the proceeds to. Come along with me on this journey. Join me and get involved at riseaboveautistic.com. Again, riseaboveautistic.com. There is hope, there is life, and there is love, even and especially in the midst of autism.
Welcome back. This is Dana Susan Beasley with Autism God's Bright Kids. And before we get back to Nathan and his conclusion of today's podcast, I just want to give a shout out to my sponsors. And if you go to riseaboveautistic.com, you will find those sponsors under a column on the right-hand side. And the links are all there, so all you have to do is click. So first of all, I want to thank Kelly Thomason with Plexus Worldwide, and then Clorinda Olesager with Young Living Essential Oils, and Annie Esselstyn with Ashy's Gifts Series. So go definitely check that out. Check that website out and find out how you can be a part of this project that I have. Now, it is January now. It's not going to happen before this April for World Autism Month to publish this book. But really, my goal, my heart of hearts, I want to make it for the following April in 2018 to get this book published. So what I need stories. I need artwork. I need plays. I need videos, audios. I need somebody, most of all, who has a passion for this and wants to come alongside, wants to be a project manager, salesperson. That is actually a paid position, commission, but it could be actually your own business. So check all that stuff out on my website, riseaboveautistic.com. And the other thing about this is that I am looking for partner organizations to give a portion of this money to. This is about Angel Arts, my company. No, I take that back. Angel Arts is not my company. Angel Arts is God's company that he inspired me to start. So, just a little disclaimer. But I want to give back to the community. That's what Angel Arts is about. And so, that's what this book is about, too. It's about encouraging people who are challenged with autism and Asperger's. So check that out, riseaboveautistic.com. And then also, be sure to go to my other website, or one of my many websites, because as Nathan tells me, I have tons of domains. I don't even think he realizes how many domains I have. But if you go to angelartsboutique.com, I have an autism awareness line, and I have mugs, I have t-shirts, I have coffee cups, I have bags, I have a lot of things. And it has the words Autism God's Bright Kids, and it has the artwork that my son did when he was 8 of a tree and a blue sky and sun and a flower. And so it's very bright and cheery, and that's what gave me this idea about autism, that each person with autism is uniquely gifted. In fact, well, every person is uniquely gifted, whether they have autism or not, but autistic kids are just as gifted as neurological kids, and neurologically typical kids, that is, and they can have a bright future. They are worthy of being loved, and they are treasured. And I speak this from the experience of having a child and a husband with Asperger's. So what we're going to do now, since I did all that, is we're going to go back to Nathan, and we're just going to finish up our talk for today. So go ahead, Nathan.
Well,
Whoops. Go ahead. It's all right.
Okay. Sorry.
We're all friendly.
I like spaced out there. I do not know what happened. But anyway, back to what we were saying. I do want to pause on that topic right now.
On drive.
It's a very good thing that we will cover later on for next week. Mm-hmm. But before all that can even happen, there's one significant baseline thing that must happen, And I think Dana is the one to share that. So, Dana, what can you say about what the first fundamental thing
was? Well, it's all about getting out of that defense mode, which comes from, I want to give him credit, Asperger experts, Danny Rady. Danny Rady is very inspiring. If you have not heard of him, go to AspergerExperts.com. That's my go-to resource right now because, well, Sam admitted to me that he's in defense mode. Yeah. And he is spending a lot of time in front of the computer. It's very hard to get him to do anything. Yeah. And I've come to realize that in combination of sleep are the two most important things that I need to do. And Sam wants to be a police officer. He does have a vision for his life, but he's doesn't seem very motivated to do anything about it right now.
Well, part of it, I guess, is the main thing is he does have the energy to. Like, we were listening to on the podcast.
Yeah, it's, well, I don't want to give it away, but yeah, there's an energy drain from
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So, there's a massive energy drain.
Right. So what we've got to do before we can have that drive or instill that drive in our kids or in ourselves is to get out of this defense mode PTSD or you know, whatever name you want to give it. And I've been there too, you know, I've felt a great sense of who am I to be doing this? I felt like worthless, like nobody cares about me, that kind of thing. So I had my own defense mode that I've had to get out of. Procrastination. Oh, I'm very good at procrastination and usually on Facebook, but it's you have to get out of that defense mode first. So that's why we wanted to talk about that and unconditional love. And the other thing that you talked about that was interesting with Sam being a man or a young man is the idea of boxing. So why don't you describe how that could help, especially a young man with Asperger's?
Well, the first thing I'll say about that, especially, you know, to any parents with a child with autism or schizophrenia or anything like that, men, we have a major need to release the physical aggression and the physical stress within our body. And a major part of that is medieval days, okay? You know, men were going off to battle all the time. They were on the battlefield fighting. They were hunting game in the forest, running for days at a time, hunting prey and doing all kinds of stuff, or working as a blacksmith. They were active. They were really extremely active every
day. Everybody was active.
Everyone was active.
Yeah.
But it's mainly unique with men in that if a man does not get that kind of hardworking release of the stress and aggression that they have that's built up from other things and the emotions and all that, if they don't have a physical release, and this is coming from me with experience of having to find my own way to deal with this as well, is that it builds up like a bottle no matter what. We're not like a lot of other people who can talk their feelings out, who can talk their emotions out. You know, men,
right.
We are
men
people of action. We are people of action, and we need to physically attack our problems.
That's why my husband, Travis, goes swimming 3 days a week, and he was, like, swimming, you know, an hour a day.
Yeah.
Exhausting himself. I wonder why he was so tired.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to be aware of, too, as a parent with a child who's autistic or schizophrenia who needs to, you know, deal with it in this way as far as getting the emotional stress out, is that you need to help kind of monitor that when you find the right release and make sure it doesn't become an unhealthy obsession. There is a balance there. You can't let it go too far or they'll get trapped into this area where all they do is, you know, like, for example, you know, go to the gym and box a punching bag. So, to the point where they're doing it all day, every day, you know. There's got to be a balance there. But one of the best techniques especially for young men who have autism or schizophrenia, is that you find them a punching bag or something that can resemble everything that they are feeling negative.
Let them draw pictures on it.
Exactly. Let them draw pictures or
that represents what they're feeling.
Or have them name it or whatever it takes. And the way I learned this is when I was a child, I really struggled with this issue. My father and I took Taekwondo together. And one thing that I did that was amazingly helpful is there are these stands called Bob. And they're basically like a rubber mannequin built for learning how to, you know, defend yourself and the pinpoint strike areas and all that. But basically, you know, what I did is one of the first times I ever used it, you know, in my whole time doing martial arts throughout my life, and I've done this several times in martial arts, is that I pictured everything that I was feeling and everything, and I convinced my mind, and I just kept saying over and over, okay, this figure, this Bob, whatever you want to name, whatever, is everything that is wrong in my life, emotionally, everything that I'm angry about, everything that I'm sad about, every little detail. And I just stood there for a good solid 15, 20 minutes, picturing and dumping it all onto this physical thing. And then I let loose. And kind of scared my dad a little bit, but he knew it was good for me, so he didn't stop me. He let it happen. And I beat that thing up. And I just punched it and kicked it. And I even started to cry and all these different things. And, you know, I just went so far. And I just beat the thing up as much as I could. But at the point where I had no more strength left to throw a single punch against that thing, and I cried all the tears I could from all the years that I had of being bullied and having all these fears and these visions and all these things for me, schizophrenic, that I've dealt with. That peaceful, blissful feeling of having it all just go away was amazing, because I had just taken all my aggression and everything I was feeling and I threw it at something physical. And it wasn't just as simple as, hey, I'm going to go and I'm going to ride on the bike, or I'm going to do... It has to be something actually aggressive. I know that sounds kind of scary for some of you parents. You don't like the idea of your child being aggressive. I get that. I really do. You know, none of us would want our children to ever be aggressive. You know, that's just something in the real world you never want your child to do. But you have to think about it as a way of not a true violent aggression, as far as that goes, but think of it as a healing way of facing your own personal demons, is how I saw it. You know, it's me facing all the issues in my life and being able to head on just say, I am not running away from you. I am not submitting to you anymore. I am not under your control, and I will do everything within my power to show you that and prove it to myself that you do not control me. And I did. And I beat that thing up, and I felt a million times better. And yes, it's not a permanent cure. I'll say it right now. It's not a permanent cure. It's not just say, do it once, and then your whole life is better for... No, it's just, that's not the way it works.
Well, and as Danny Rady describes, and you didn't hear this part, you know, you can go... It takes a while. Yeah. And again, I would highly, highly recommend getting his podcast, because I don't want to reveal what he said, obviously.
Yeah.
That would be...
Yeah.
That wouldn't be right, but it is definitely inspiring me, and it was interesting having you listen to it.
Yeah.
And have the insights.
Exactly.
About Sam and Travis, because the other thing that happens is that Travis tends to, my husband, he tends to demand things of people, and you and Sam don't take that very well,
yeah.
So I'm often the interpreter.
Yeah.
That's my role, is
yeah.
Sam comes to me and says, can you, you know, or I hear something that's not quite right.
Yeah.
You need to say it. And this is how children with autism, especially in schizophrenia, I'm just wondering what you're saying, but
yeah,
I know you.
Exactly.
You don't just go up to, and I can't just say, Nathan, go clean your room.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't work.
Instant rejection from the person with schizophrenia or so autism.
What it has to be is like, Sam, will you please, what? No, I can't.
I guess the best way to say it, in my opinion, would be, go up to your child, and if there's something you want them to do, especially if they're in the emotional shutdown zone, go up to them and gently say, Henry. Okay, we're going to use Henry. We're picking on Henry. For all you Henrys out there, just know I'm not picking on you. I'm just using that name because
that's random.
Oh, that's so Henry, your room has a lot of clutter, and I don't want you to fall and hurt yourself. I don't want anyone else to hurt themselves going in there. Would you please, when you have it, you know, when you're done with what you're doing, I would like it if you went and cleaned, just even a part of your room, You don't even have to say your whole room. Just
well,
say,
and if you say clean your whole room, what's going to happen is they're going to go immediately into defense mode.
Exactly.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
It's too much.
Exactly.
No way. You have to break things down.
Yeah, because again,
step
it's that
by
spectrum.
Step by step. Yeah.
It's that spectrum. Like with the hoodie, it's that whole view thing that they can't handle. You have to break it into sections.
You have to break it down. And I often, actually, as you know, Sam's room needs cleaning again, and so...
So is mine.
I haven't even looked in that room. I'm scared too. But I will be helping Sam with my room. I'm not sure I'm going to be helping you with your room. You're just going to have to pack. Sorry.
Yeah.
I already helped you once.
But hey,
anyway.
That's a good point. All we have to do is throw it in the suitcase and we're good.
Yeah, right. So that's not an issue here. But anyway, so... Asking him, will you please, or I need you to do this, or being respectful about it. Kids deserve our respect.
Exactly.
As if we want respect, we need to give respect. That's
exactly
how I see it.
Respect isn't a right. It is a privilege. It is a mutual trust. It's something
you
don't just get because you have the right for
it. Or you're bigger than...
Bigger or louder or whatever.
Sam is bigger than me now.
Yeah, he's pretty tall.
Yeah.
But, it all goes down to if you want anyone to have a positive response to what you say or do, you got to understand from their level and lower yourself to their level.
So along with that is a very important thing, and that is giving them time.
Yeah.
And so you don't just say, stand over them and demand it right now.
Yeah.
You have to give them... Our rule is 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's reasonable. Okay, so I give him notice. Okay, Sam, in 15 minutes, we're going to start school.
Yeah.
And so that helps him. And the other thing with that is a schedule. I have to tell him at least a day ahead of time what's going on. I don't know how many times I've been told, well, I didn't know anything. You didn't tell me. And so that freaks him out. It's not in his control. He wants to know. He wants to have all this preparation time. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing to prepare.
Yeah.
But he needs that.
Yeah.
So that's another very important thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, we talked about the getting out of defense mode as a precursor to having this drive and this motivation. So next week, your last week with us.
Mm-hmm.
I know, here.
Right? We don't want to go back.
So, anyway, your last week here, we'll talk more about this drive and motivation. And then, hopefully, I will be having another guest on that I described in the beginning of the show that's really exciting. So, things just seem to be opening up, and there's lots
definitely.
Of possibilities.
And hopefully, God willing, we'll move up here soon, and I'll be able to be around more, be on the show
more.
Yeah,
right. That'll be fun. And you were talking about having your own show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, definitely.
Fun stuff.
Hopefully, I'll have, the first recorded and everything. I can send it up to you before we move up here.
Lots of possibilities. And you have the drive now.
Yep.
You had to go through some pretty awful times.
Oh, yeah.
But, I was always kind of a live-and-learn type, learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Totally different stuff, but anyway, well, great. Well, we'll look forward to next week, and thank you for listening to today's episode, and be sure to tune in next Monday at 4:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Together, we will reach new heights in our lives and beyond, because there is hope, there is life, there is love, even in the midst of autism and schizophrenia. Blessings to you. This is Dana Susan Beasley and
Nathan Green
signing off.